Good morning. Welcome to episode 27 of the Driller Newscast, a weekly update on the news and stories impacting the water well and industrial drilling industry. Episode 27 is brought to you by WildBend Incorporated. WildBend Inc., a privately held, family-owned business, has been providing high-quality drilling fluid products since 1951. WildBend's knowledgeable customer service, sales, and research people bring industry-leading products and support to the marketplace. The innovative products are the results of field-driven solutions and dedications to the customer's goals. We got an exciting week of news. This week in the news, we'll cover money released into our industry by the federal infrastructure law for abandoning orphan wells and for water reuse projects. Our main story of the week is on water theft and abuse happening right now as we hit the peak of late summer. But before we dive into the news, let's get refocused on safety after a great four-day weekend. It's our Refocus Safety Week. We just finished a four-day weekend that celebrated everything that is great about our industry. The height of the Industrial Revolution is when Labor Day became part of our country. At the time, it was September 5th, and the idea was to give the blue-collar working man and woman a day off. At the time, we were working 7 days a week, 12-hour days. I know a couple of you are chuckling right now saying, that's what we still do, Brock. Well, it's not what we all do. So as we circle up right now and we have this safety discussion, let's grab some bottles of water and get rehydrated, because we know there's some individuals that have spent as much time as they could on the golf course or on the boat or on the beach or behind the grill. And we all need some extra water. Be a great time to grab some extra electrolytes. I think about a couple bad situations I've been in as the individual hurt or somebody fatigued. It was after a big four-day weekend holiday. I was on the Nexus pipeline and we had a individual that showed up 7 a.m. Tuesday morning, and we know he went as late as he could on Monday night before coming back to this project. And he celebrated the end of summer. And he was a perfect candidate for heat-related illnesses and exhaustion. So let's get everybody circled up, get some water into them. Let's do some stretching. Let's see if we got anything going on with shoulders or necks or backs or knees from all the craziness that we did this summer. And then we have a four-day work week, and it is all up to you leaders that we get what we can get in this four-day work week. So you set the tempo and the expectations for the projects being done. Let's take a look at our equipment. Let's do a big walk around, make sure we have the right tools, the right processes. We're not going to cut shortcuts because we only have 4 days. And understand, we all have the ability to say stop when we see somebody fatigued, we see something not working correctly, we see somebody distracted because it was still that great of a weekend. So I want you all to be smart and safe this week. We'll get back to a full safety topic on episode 28. For the news this week, we're going to talk about more available funds being infused into the drilling industry that all of you should be diversifying your business and taking advantage of. The Department of Interior announced last week it had awarded an initial $560 million from the infrastructure law to 24 states to begin work to plug, cap, and reclaim orphan oil and gas wells. Millions of Americans across the country live within 1 mile of an orphaned oil and gas well. Eligible states have indicated that there are over 10,000 high-priority well sites across the country ready for immediate remediation efforts, with many more lined up for future actions. The infrastructure law is enabling us to confront long-standing environmental injustices by making a historic investment to plug orphan wells throughout the country. This is from Secretary Deb Haaland at the Department of Interior. We are working on multiple fronts to clean up these sites as quickly as we can by investing in efforts on federal lands and partnering with states and tribes to leave no community behind. Today's announcement is exciting progress towards what we will accomplish together through the historic law. The bipartisan infrastructure law delivers the largest investment in tackling legacy pollution in American history, including $4.7 billion investment to plug orphan wells. Today's investment is part of an overall $1.15 billion in Phase 1 funding announced in January by the Department for states to plug and remediate orphan wells. States will receive additional formula funding dollars in the coming months. In addition, an initial $33 million was recently allocated to plug 277 wells on federal public lands. The Tribal Orphan Well Grant Program is being informed by ongoing tribal consultation and listening to sessions. Of states eligible for funding, 22 have been allocated $25 million each in initial state grants. Arkansas and Mississippi will receive $5 million each to support methane measurement and begin plugging wells. This is exciting. We talked about this on episode 8. Jeremy and I did a drilling insight with the Well Done Foundation on orphaned wells. This is a big deal, and we all need to look at our businesses, look at the Department of Interior, find out where the funding is going in the states. You got a piece of equipment, you got a team. It's time to get involved in abandoning these wells and making a new revenue stream for your company. Next, the Bureau of Reclamation announced $310 million in funding, also from the federal infrastructure law, for planning, designing, and construction of water reuse projects across the country. It's exactly what we talked about in episode 26. Water conservation reuse is going to be a big part of our future. And again, that gets into ASR wells and all the ways our businesses may be able to diversify and support this initiative. The selected projects will advance drought resilience and are expected to increase annual capacity by about 213,000 acre-feet of water, which is enough water to support more than 850,000 people a year. Water is essential to everything we do, and it will take all of us working together to address the significant drought impacts we are seeing across the West. As the climate crisis drives severe drought conditions and historically low water allocations, the federal infrastructure law is making historic investments to address water in a drought challenges and invest in our nation's western water and power infrastructure. This was said by Secretary Holland. Water reuse helps communities diversify their water supply as they are facing an unprecedented drought and a challenging climate, said by Commissioner Touton. This has tangible impacts and can help feed families, grow crops, sustain wildlife and the environment, and help more families access safe, clean, reliable water. These projects will provide flexibility for communities and help them stretch their current drinking supplies as they will be treating wastewater that continues to be available. We're going to see more and more of this type of situations. It's going to be part of our industry. Funding will support local water management agencies with stretching existing drinking water supplies and helping to ensure that growing water needs can be met through the advanced treatment of wastewater and naturally impaired surface and groundwater. Along with non-federal contributions, last week's investment will support an overall $1.2 billion in infrastructure projects. The infrastructure law has allocated $8.3 billion for the Bureau of Reclamation water infrastructure projects to repair aging water delivery systems, secure dams, complete rural water projects, that's drilling wells, and protect aquatic ecosystems. And we're going to see that in our main story, the very important aspect of as we're pulling out of these rivers, what's happening with these ecosystems. The funding announced today is part of a $1 billion in Water Smart Water Recycling and Reuse Grant provided by the Federal Infrastructure Law. This is big. And we've talked before, the department had announced $52.2 million this year already in Water Smart Grants, which were funded by the bipartisan infrastructure law to support water and energy efficiency projects and conserve watersheds and restore aquatic habitats. This is a big deal. I'm very excited for where this is going to go, and we all need to be part of these funds. Again, get involved. For the main story of the week, I want to talk about the dichotomy of abuse in water consumption from states that have an abundance to drought-stricken states. First, we head to California-Oregon border. The Klamath Irrigation District in southern Oregon has reversed course and now says it has complied with a U.S. government order to stop delivering water to farmers in a very drought-stricken area. The district's directors initially defied the federal government's order to shut off water to the Klamath Project, but the Klamath Irrigation District has since closed the canal after federal officials threatened to withhold millions in drought assistance. The U.S. Bureau of Reclamation manages the Klamath Project, which includes the Klamath Irrigation District and serves 266 square miles of farmland at the Oregon-California border. A limited allocation of water was allowed for irrigators from the Upper Klamath Lake this year because of all the extreme drought conditions. The Bureau has said the project is now out of water and ordered a shutdown in late August. However, the irrigation district directors refuted the shutdown, authorizing the district manager, Gene Sousa, to continue operations, arguing that the U.S. agency had not provided a legal justification. Next, a letter from the Bureau threatened a warning that unless the irrigation district reversed course, it would disqualify all land served by the district from receiving $20 million in emergency drought funding. This action not only impacted the Klamath Irrigation District, but more than a half dozen other irrigation and water districts. The Klamath Irrigation District Board held an emergency meeting and decided to close the canal. Here's the quote from the board. "Our desire to do what was right for the community put us in a really bad spot. There was no good decision." This all came from a primary issue arose with the Endangered Species Act. The river levels had become low enough that fish, including shortnose and Lost River suckerfish in Upper Klamath Lake and coho salmon in the Lower Klamath River, were impacted. The Federal Bureau initially allocated 15% of the demand for irrigators starting in April 15th. Then officials said that if the inflows to the Upper Klamath Lake exceeded expectations, which we had quite a bit of rain, they would set aside 50% additional water for irrigators. This was very confusing. The farmers planned on their complete allotment, and the shortage is impacting a successful growing season. How did this happen? It comes into in-stream flows, which are another essential impact that is considered in utilization of river water for consumption. Conventional in-stream flows are based on a specified level of flow to be left in a stream, and they determine how much water can be used for development. Such in-stream water rights have been quantified with values that at this time, in a 24-year drought, is no longer viable for the river's natural pattern of flow. These factors impact how water is released for development. And that brings us into releasing water. Next, we're going to jump to a story in Furnace County, Nebraska, from the Associated Press that landed in late August. Authorities in Nebraska are trying to determine who released 16 million gallons of water by opening a dam on an irrigation channel one night this month, and why. The puzzling water release from the Cambridge Canal reduced the flow to some 18,000 acres of crops and jeopardized expensive irrigation equipment. According to Brad Edgerton, the general manager of the Frenchman Cambridge Irrigation District that runs the nearly 48-mile-long waterway, the canal was flowing at a normal rate of 150 cubic feet per second when Edgerton checked on his computer on the night of August 13th. But by the following morning, the flow had been cut in half. Something had happened at the canal's dam near the town of Cambridge, about 200 miles west of Lincoln. Edgerton drove there and discovered that someone had wrenched open the dam's two 10-foot sluice gates, sending the precious water down the Republican River. He estimates about 50 acre feet of water was lost during the roughly 8 hours that the gates were open, and that the water was worth around, get this, $2,600. This is based on the Nebraska farmers paying $52 per acre foot price. Consider this. We have the Klamath Irrigation District trying to continue to release water as much as possible, be successful. And now we move into a water abundant state that's had plenty of rainfall, and they pay $52 per acre foot. This comes from Edgerton. It was an unfortunate situation. In the scheme of things, it wasn't a lot of water, but it was an inconvenience. I scrambled to notify farmers downstream about the problem and called the sheriff and contacted the Bureau of Reclamation to get more water released from the Harry Strunk Reservoir to replenish the canal. Just called up the Bureau of Reclamation and said, "Hey, we'll take another 16 million gallons, please." A statement from County Attorney Patrick Culkins. It's not clear if any state law governs the act of releasing canal water back into a river or provides penalties. Department of Homeland Security? Terrorism? Culkins goes on to say, "But I will try to find a penalty if the sheriff does find out who grabbed the hand crank wheel from where it was hung nearby and used it to open the gates." We have accusation of penalty of withholding $20 million for drought relief if we don't shut down out of Upper Klamath Lake. And in Nebraska, we're just going to pump another 16 million gallons in and you're good. This all comes down to what's going on in California. The California State Legislature on August 24th delivered a letter to Attorney General Garland on the Department of Justice investigating drought profiteering, water rights abuse, and water theft. This is this letter. It is very important that we cover this because there are some bold allegations and a lot that we really need to be looking into as a industry and as we look at legislation and why we're pointing fingers. Again, as I've said before, we need to know who our advocates are, who our allies are, and where we're going next. Dear Attorney General Garland, California's water situation entered a dire new stage recently, with some community wells drying up, other communities facing water shortages, and still others facing upwards of 1,000% increase to their water bills. Also, many farms are being forced into selling as investors monopolize land and water access. That is why we are renewing our request to your office, asking the Department of Justice to investigate potential drought profiteering, water rights abuse, and water theft, as outlined in our previous letter dated May 17, 2022. We've also grown concern and feel that we have reason to believe less water availability in the West could be due to fraud and market manipulation." That is a big thing to say. "We believe this manipulation is causing water prices to spike and may soon cause a spike in food prices. California water history reminds us that it is not just investors who are to blame for fraud or market manipulation, and that we must consider the role that professional consulting firms play in our water outcomes." Consulting firms, are you hearing this? Hydrogeologists? "So, in concert with our renewed request, we ask that you also investigate the extent to which market manipulation and fraud are impacting the water market in the West. Reliable data has become increasingly essential for regional analysis and decision-making as a way to address resource management, regulatory compliance, environmental impacts, ecosystem services, urban and economic development, and other issues. It plays a key role in what legislation is passed, how decisions are made, and why policies are implemented the way that they are. Accordingly, it is important that this data is accurate and based in the best scientific evidence available." California specifically, reliable data is essential to the implementation of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act that was adopted in 2014 in response to a multi-year drought framework study to ensure that groundwater use would be sustainably managed at a local level, with the ideal being that those closest to the groundwater basin would be the best equipped to manage them. It's all about allowing local control. The inherent complexity of this legislation left some groundwater sustainability agencies in need of hiring private consulting firms to help them develop their plans and also to measure regional and local water use. Its framework also seemed to have lent itself to only the most powerful entities, those owning the most land, sitting on groundwater sustainability agency boards, and shaping the policy coming out of these boards. Again, we talk about this. Who are our advocates? Who are our allies? Who's got more money paying another lobby to force things to be the way they are? Back to the letter. There seems to be a growing concern that the technologies and models that these firms use to collect this data have not been substantially vetted for their accuracy. There's lots of groundwater withdrawal tools, and there's a lot of moving parts here. We see in Nebraska, they've spent $50 million in engineering on just looking at building the canal and everything from Colorado. Back to the letter. Such vetting is important because it is not only shapes the decision making of the board, but also the farmers underneath that board that may decide to sell rather than harvest their land and incur the fees they may otherwise be required to pay. We must ensure that data and the cost associated with it is not being used to manipulate small farmers into giving up their livelihoods by pricing them out and making their water use information available to those that would use it against them. There is some concern that information being gathered by consulting firms is being provided to some of the larger property owners in groundwater sustainability agencies, allowing for land monopolization when smaller farmers make the decision to sell, creating a submarket within the existing water market. The letter goes on to talk about abuse of releasing 700,000 acre feet prematurely into the San Joaquin Basin and many other situations. This is a big deal. This is something that we need to be following. We need to see what happens with the Department of Justice. And again, we got great consulting and engineering firms. We got great people in this industry executing effectively. And then at the same time, this is all about livelihood of major agriculture and big business. And so sometimes things are looked at differently, and we all have to be aware of what's going on. Let's pay attention to all of this because what's happening here in the West will move east, and we all need to be paying attention to that. Thank you for joining us for episode 27 of the Driller Newscast, which is brought to you by Wild Bend Incorporated. Wild Bend Inc., a privately held family-owned business, has been providing high-quality drilling fluid products since 1951. Wild Bend's knowledgeable customer service, sales, and research people bring industry-leading products and support to the marketplace. The innovative products are the result of field-driven solutions and dedication to the customer's goals. Thank you, Wild Bend. Continue to pay attention to the money that's coming in from the federal infrastructure law and the inflation reduction law that can impact our industry with the grants, the abandoned wells, the water infrastructure, the geothermal, all of that opportunities for us to diversify. I hope you have your teams recentered after a long 4-day weekend. It was great. Let's have a big, productive week. And continue to pay attention to what's going on with this water legislation and how, like I said, working west to east. Thanks, everybody.